Before we get to today's episode, I wanted to remind you about another great NBA podcast, The Low Post, with none other than Zach Lowe. In the latest episode, Zach and Kevin Arnovitz discuss the rising Memphis Grizzlies and the star power of Ja Morant, as well as the battle for the number 8 seed in the West and Frank Vogel's terrific coaching job with the Lakers. You can find The Low Post wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, to meet those New Year's resolutions and get fit in 2020, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for overpriced fitness equipment. The best way to get in the shape of your life is with Echelon. You go to echelonfit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer high quality at-home cycling experiences at less than half the price of Peloton. I'll say that again. Less than half the price of Peloton. Echelon makes beautifully engineered products for everyone, from busy moms to dads to everyone in between. First responders, elite athletes, whatever your activity level is. And with daily live on-demand studio classes right in your home, you'll never have to step foot in a gym. You'll love Echelon, but if you aren't 100% satisfied, of course, they'll give you your money back. Join hundreds of thousands of men and women who are getting fit with Echelon. Don't pay a ton for Peloton. Buy an Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Go to echelonfit.com/hoop to learn about their limited-time free iPad offer and complete details of it. Again, that's echelon.com/hoop, echelonfit.com/hoop, H-O-O-P, echelonfit.com/hoop. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Thursday afternoon as we are recording this. Tim McMahon has had some travel issues. He's been on the road for a week and he's a little bit delayed. Hopefully he'll join us a little later, but if not, you can live without Van McMahon for a week. Joining us in Boston is Jackie McMullen. Hi, Jackie.
Ryan, hello.
Glad to be. And we may have Andrew Hahn in Los Angeles. You know, he may snidely make comments, butt in. But that's
it. All depends what we're talking about, I imagine.
So, Jackie, I got multiple emails from the NBA prodding me to get my All-Star voting in. There's weighted ballots. The players get a say, the fans vote gets a say, and the media gets a say. And I know that nobody wants the media, the dirty, unwashed, cruel, incompetent media to get a say in this. But frankly, the media is the only branch that you can trust to be somewhat objective, because the fan vote has become a bit of a mess in recent years. And here this year, I know everybody loves Taco Fall, but Taco Fall getting more votes than deserving All-Stars. And a couple years ago when Zaza Pachulia came within a whisker of being voted in as a starter to the game, it caused the league to make the change. But every single year you look at the player voting and there's all kinds of ridiculous votes that the players put in. I'm not saying that all players don't take it seriously, but there's a whole bunch of players who don't take it seriously. Media,
I think some of them use it as a grudge too. Don't you think some of them, it's their own little personal grudge sometimes too?
Well, the media has grudges too, but
do they though? In this
like, there's
case?
Just
oh, come on.
Do well, they really make the voting so? Public. Yeah, I think so. I always, you know, I mean, the media is not perfect, obviously. But the votes are all
personal.
Made public.
I know.
Well, that I agree with, but the votes are all made public, not who
right.
casts them, but you see the results, and every single year
right.
the players do it, you see guys getting votes where. You can tell they're not taking it seriously or whatever.
Sure.
They're trying to send some sort of message.
Right. Gotcha.
So I see people complaining about the media having a vote, but what do you want us to do? We're the best of a lot of bad options.
Right.
So we vote for the starters. Now you may say, where are the coaches? The coaches vote for the reserves. That's the way it's been for a long time. And that ballot is secret, and they don't put out the voting totals. I wish they would, Jackie.
I do too.
Really,
I've said that
would.
To coaches, and there's plenty of coaches that say we're good with it. So, I'm not sure what the thinking
yeah.
behind that is.
I
mean, you can't vote for your own player, right? Can't vote for your own player.
Can't vote for your own player. Or coach.
Right.
So, I put my ballot in today, and I think you said you put yours in yesterday.
Yes.
Some of it's pretty easy, but there's a couple of difficult
yeah,
spots.
A couple of things that give you pause, for sure. Well, you want to start with the obvious? Should we start with the obvious?
I think the... Okay, well, what would you think is the most obvious? So the way this works is you have to vote for two guards and three front court players. You can vote for three forwards if you want, but the centers are included.
Right.
Well, what did you think was obvious?
Well, I mean, it's obvious that Giannis should be an East All-Star starter, right?
Yes,
I would say it's
front court vote.
All right, so let's go very obvious. Like, that's incredibly obvious. To me, it's obvious that LeBron, Anthony Davis. Actually, I think the starting five for the West is obvious, don't you?
Well, tell me who you voted for, and I'll tell you.
Okay, I voted for LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard as my front court, James Harden, and Luka Doncic as my back court. That was not hard for me.
I did too. But can I say that...
Of course you can. It's your podcast. You can say whatever you want, Brian.
These positions are a little funky.
Yes,
because
I agree with that.
Luka is listed as a guard and LeBron is listed as a forward.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron is the point guard for the Lakers. And
he's the point forward for the Lakers.
Well,
see?
Isn't Luka the point forward of the Mavericks?
Well, see, you could... All right, so let's just argue that... Let's take your argument. It still works out because LeBron... Let's say LeBron's your guard and Luka's your forward. It's still the same five guys.
Well, it does work out right now.
It does.
But...
I had trouble with this in the East. If I picked the five players that I wanted that in the East, I might have changed my mind a little bit. But we can go to that in a minute. Let's start. Yeah, that's the thing, right?
Well, I agree. That was exactly my ballot. And
who gave you pause? Anybody else gave you pause?
Well,
to think maybe Damian Lillard. But how can you stop? You know, how can you eliminate either Harden or Doncic? You just can't, right?
Wouldn't it be fascinating if LeBron was properly listed as a guard?
That would have been fascinating.
That
really would have been fascinating.
I mean,
I'm glad
you could make the argument that he's been a point guard for the last 15 years, but he's never played more pure point guard than he has this season.
Agreed. But we can only go by how they're listed. I mean, so many of these players to me, Brian, can be positionalist. Like, I actually looked up to see how they listed Jimmy Butler. Because I think he could be a guard, don't you?
The Butler situation was a hard one for me. So
difficult.
All right, so let's talk about that. So the Eastern Conference, Jimmy Butler is listed as a forward.
He is.
Now Jimmy
that
Butler...
That was a problem for me.
I would submit Jimmy Butler has started every single game this year for the Heat at shooting guard. Because they have Duncan Robinson, Myers Leonard, and Bam Adebayo. You would not call Bam Adebayo or Myers Leonard guards. And Duncan Robinson, as far as I know, is a forward. So,
right. But think about
Kendrick
his skill
Nunn.
Set. He's a forward with the skill set of a guard, right? He's a three-point shooter. See,
and unfortunately
it's positionalist basketball. You know, this is what
I know.
Brad
and it's always been a little bit blurry between shooting guards and small forwards. But this hurts him. I suspect that he would have a better chance to be voted in as a starter had he been listed as a guard.
I'm sorry. Can we take a step back for a moment? Brian, did you guys actually tell us who you voted for?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why not?
Doncic, Harden, Kawhi
LeBron.
Leonard, Anthony Davis, and LeBron. We had the same Western Conference ballot. We haven't gotten to the East yet.
Got it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. All right, sorry.
Okay. We're all about transparency here on the Hoop Collective.
Right.
Yes, we are.
Now, our individual votes will not be made public. The voting totals will be made public. So it's up to us whether we want to reveal, although I don't think there's much controversy in the West. As Jackie said, I think that's the way most media members are going to go. In the East, the interesting thing is going to be the guard spots because Kyrie is second in voting. Trae Young is going to win the players' vote. Not the players' vote, the fan vote.
Fan
and Kyrie,
vote.
I think, most recently was second.
Right.
Neither one of them are on my ballot, Jackie.
Or mine, although Trae Young was a tough omission.
I agreed.
Kyrie hasn't played enough games. Listen, if Kyrie was playing, that would be a whole other story. His numbers
That's
are
correct.
Obvious. But he hasn't played
That's
nearly
correct.
Enough games to even consider him. So you and I probably have the same guards, is my guess.
Well, okay.
Kemba Walker
is on my list.
And Ben Simmons.
Okay, I had three players I considered here. I considered Ben Simmons. By the way, tell me that Ben Simmons plays any differently than LeBron and Luka Doncic.
I know. Well, the funny thing about this is, if we really want to get into positions, the best position in the world for Ben Simmons would be forward. There's no doubt in my mind he should be a forward. He'd be much better off. Right. So it's confusing.
By the way, as I was watching, I watched the game last night between the Nets and 76ers.
As did
and Embiid is out, obviously, with the finger injury. It's so clear that Ben is so much more effective when the floor is more spread.
Right. And but in fairness to Embiid, Embiid is far more effective when Ben isn't playing. The difference is Ben plays all the time, and Embiid's the one that's usually out. But
like this is just glaring. It's better for Horford. It's better for their team. It's better for Ben. Like this is like the big thing that nobody wants to talk about, right? It's not an insult to either player, but the way the two players
play, their skill sets don't mesh. Yeah, their skill sets
I mean, like at some point, this is going to have to be dealt with. They can keep pretending that it's not an issue, but what do you want? It's clear.
It's all about spacing, and I think where there's some friction, or therein lies the rub, as Shakespeare once said, is that Embiid will step outside and shoot threes. And at one point, I can't remember when, a few weeks ago before he got hurt, he said, look, everybody has to do this. You've got to do it. It's best for the team. And, you know, everyone could draw their own conclusions that he was speaking to Ben. And I haven't really talked at length to Ben about this, why it is, you know, clearly he doesn't feel comfortable taking those shots. I don't think he wants to be bullied into taking them.
That's 100% clear.
Right, and it's a he's a very skilled, talented player who, as you have pointed out, has thrived now with a little more space to operate down around the paint where he's most comfortable. So at some point, yes, I agree with you. I think something's going to have to give here, which is a shame because they're both all-stars. They're both great players. I like them both tremendously. I don't think there's this big feud going on like others do. I don't see that when I'm around them. I don't feel that when I'm around them. Teammates don't have to be best friends. They just have to respect one another's abilities. And I think they do respect one another's abilities, but they just unfortunately don't work well together. And we've seen this before. You know, what was the question? Our big question in Indiana, could Sabonis and Miles Turner play together? Now, Sabonis has so separated himself from Miles this year. And Sabonis is the beast of that team. And with Victor coming back, everyone's talking about Malcolm Brogdon and how Victor and Malcolm Brogdon will play together. Will they fit? So that's the thing people need to understand about the NBA. You can't just take the five most talented players and throw them together. They have to fit. They have to space well together on the floor. They have to complement each other's strengths and cover up each other's weaknesses. That's a big part of how teams win.
Yeah, it's going to be something that is just going to be, at some point, going to have to be dealt with. So I had three, so I put Kemba. Mm-hmm. I had three guys I thought for my second spot. Trae Young was one of them. Trae's, even though defensively it's been really rough, his offensive numbers are spectacular. His efficiency numbers are spectacular. He's going to win the fan vote for that. I had Ben Simmons, as you mentioned, and I had Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal, yep.
And Jackie, I voted Bradley Beal.
Oh, you did? Okay. All right.
It was sort of a neck and neck thing. It wasn't like I was putting down either other player. Now he's been out, and I'm a little bit concerned about his health. It's not really being talked about that much, but he's had some lower leg issues, and now all of a sudden, out of the blue, yesterday he said he had a shoulder injury, even though he actually hadn't played. That they added shoulder to his leg, and I'm a little bit worried about that. A lot of people are focused on it. So I'm just worried about his health a little bit. He's having a career year, his career scoring, highest scoring of his career. Now, that's because, you know, Wall is not there.
They also lead the league in scoring, right?
That's
the
true.
That's the way they play.
Career high in assists. Mm-hmm. His three-point percentage is down, but I think he's had a great year, and I think he's shown good leadership there.
And I don't disagree with any of that. I don't. I leaned towards Ben Simmons, and I know what everybody's going to say, because I had Joel Embiid first team. Did you? I'm assuming you did, as one of your starters.
I did.
So people are going to say, well, they're the most underperforming, disappointing team. How can you have two guys starting on a team that's underperformed? And I understand that argument, but I'm not sure why I should penalize Ben Simmons for that. I'm not prepared to do that. And I think Ben Simmons, you know, because he's a better two-way player. I don't want to disparage Bradley Beal because everything you've said is correct. I just think that Ben Simmons, as an overall player, has been very, very important to them. And I think he's having a very good year as well. Now, he doesn't shoot the three, and Bradley Beal does, but he defends better than Bradley Beal. I mean, you know, if we want to play that game, we certainly can. I don't think either answer is wrong. I guess that would be what I'd say. I respect both of those votes.
Yeah. So that's the back. I think the East backcourt will be the only surprise. I had Giannis, Embiid, and Siakam as my East frontcourt.
Yes, as did I.
And I think the guy who's going to get squeezed out there is Jimmy Butler, because if I could have voted Jimmy Butler as a guard, out of respect to how the Heat have played, especially, I probably would have given him the spot that Bradley Beal's in.
I would have done the exact same thing. Isn't that funny how you and I think alike? I actually double-checked before I went to vote. You know, of course, when you actually do the balloting, when you click, you know, it says vote for two guards. So even if you were thinking that Jimmy Butler was a guard, you wouldn't be able to vote for him as a guard because he wouldn't appear.
Yeah, I guess to be clear, maybe I wasn't clear about this at the outset. The league establishes who you can vote for as guards and forwards.
Yeah, we don't establish that. It's already established for us. But before I even went on their ballot, their official ballot, I'm sure you do the same thing. I get on, I look at stats, I look at records of teams, I look at lineups, I look at defensive ratings. I do all of those things, but I take this pretty seriously. I hope everybody who votes does. And so when I looked at Butler, I was like, I wonder how they'll, you know, how is he listed? And because you could list him as a guard. So many of these players are interchangeable.
So just to be clear here, Brian, you voted Kemba, Beal, Embiid, Siakam, Giannis, and Jackie voted Kemba, Ben Simmons, Embiid, Siakam, and Giannis.
Right. And both of us felt Trae Young deserved great consideration and just got edged out. And had we had a chance to vote Jimmy Butler as a guard, I think we both would have had Giannis, Siakam, Embiid, Kemba, and Butler.
Got it. I'm just making it clear that that's what happened. Cool.
It feels like you're recording something to try to hold it over us later.
I know. He's being very. What's this all about? What do you got on your mind, Han?
Let me just get this doubly checked on the roster or on the record.
Before we drop the guillotine on your very long necks.
So, just as a brief update, the most recent All-Star voting had Giannis, Embiid, and Siakam as the three front court players. So they're going to, if that holds, they're going to win the fan vote, most likely the media vote. I think there's a good chance that that's what happens. In the East, you're in the guard spot. Trae Young, Kyrie are 1 and 2. Kemba, Derrick Rose, Zach LaVine. Ben Simmons is 8. Bradley Beal is 9. Pretty far
down. That's always the way, right? So, and you know, Kyrie's back playing now. So you've got to assume that. Well, I know he said that he's, you know, we're not 100% sure. I know we're going to talk about Kyrie in a bit, but just with the shoulder, I'm assuming that he's probably going to play. So what that means is, and I know we're going to do the reserves another day, but that's going to bump somebody pretty deserving from now playing in this game.
Yeah.
That's how that game is played.
Kyle Lowry was another player that I mulled also from a vote as well.
For a starter?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously didn't, but I mean, I looked at him. I considered him as a candidate.
Sure.
Taco Fall, sixth place in the Eastern Conference.
But you know what? It's not his fault.
I'm not saying it's his fault. Alex Caruso is sixth.
I talked to him about
guards.
It. I saw him the other night. I hadn't seen him for a while. And, you know, we did a piece together, I don't know, right around Christmas time, I guess, about how I just wish people would see Taco Fall as this living, human, breathing person, not a curiosity for everybody to, you know. I mean, people push each other out of the way. They behave like animals just to go get a picture with the guy. And half the time they don't even say, hi, Taco, nice to meet you. May I have your picture? They just like, picture, you know. And he's treated at times like a circus animal, and it really bothers me. And so you would think that this voting would be something to celebrate, but you know, Brad Stevens was the first to say, I don't like it. And I understand why. Look at your front court, you know. And he's just behind Jason Tatum. I mean, quite a bit behind. But, you know, a guy like Bam Adebayo who's having a career year, I mean, don't be silly. You know, his own teammate, Gordon Hayward, trailing him by a significant amount. And I think Brad wants Taco Fall to be loved on his merit, not just on the fact that he's 7'5" and makes a good, you know, it's a great selfie.
And so he has an incredible name. I mean, it's an easy to remember name.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, I tell people again, and I'll say it again, understand how intelligent and thoughtful this man is, doing all sorts of things to help his native Senegal. And number two, scored an 800 on his SATs, Brian, with English as his second language.
Crazy.
He's a brilliant young man, engineer, very, very smart young man. So next time you see him, everybody who's listening, look at him as the person and not the curiosity. That's all I ask.
Andrew, I know last week you were talking about how excited you were that the professional bull riders, the PBR, as you like to call them, are coming to Staples Center, and that you would really want to go, and you were trying to get me to go with you. And I can tell you that we can make it happen if we just head on over to Vivid Seats. Because if you need tickets to anything, whether it's a Laker game in LA, whether it's a Celtics game in Boston, whether it's the PBR, because this is one of Andrew's secret loves, you can go to the great online ticket marketplace that's dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that last a lifetime, and that's Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats helps fans find seats to their favorite live events, sports, concerts, theater, and more, all through their app at Vivid Seats. They offer great prices, and this is most important, an easy purchasing experience, of course, and their well-known in-app loyalty program, Vivid Seats Rewards. You can become an MVP to a Hall of Famer and earn from 10 to 16% credit on all purchases through the app. So the first thing you do is you go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the rewards program, and you can start getting your returns. And this is something that goes without saying, but just so you know, all of their orders are backed by a 100% guarantee, so you get to see your show and have peace of mind going into it. And right now, if you enter ESPN25 in the promo code box, you can get 10% off your next order. That's ESPN25. Vivid Seats, the best online ticket marketplace out there.
I think I was saying we should go to PBR, the drinkable variety.
Oh.
Okay.
There's another app for that.
Shocking.
Mr. Windhurst?
Yes.
We have cornered Mr. Tim McMahon. He should be on with us now.
Oh.
Howdy, partners. You going to play my theme song?
No, that was... actually, we were going to today, but since you were late, we... we had to cut it.
Sorry. Blame an airline that I will not call out unless it's on Twitter and I'm trying to get miles.
So last night, Kyrie had an interesting Kyrie moment after the game. He did not play well. Now, it was the second night of a back-to-back. He just came back after missing 2 months. I'm not going to focus too much on his play.
On the fact that he was absolutely god-awful? You're not going to going to state that. He was terrible.
I will say that it was a little bit unsavory that he was kind of hogging the ball in the fourth quarter when he clearly didn't have it going.
He was the worst player on his team last night.
Well, beyond that, I'm going to be careful about evaluating his performance on the second of a back-to-back after he didn't play for 2 months.
But, fair.
After the game, he was asked about the state of the Nets, and he gave one of those amazing Kyrie quotes. The strange things about Kyrie is that there are times when he can say things that are incredibly transparent and true and, like, cut through all the noise and get right to the bone of something, and you're like, wow, I can't believe Kyrie said that. And then there are many other times where he talks and you almost fall into a trance with the way he talks in fragmented sentences, completely changes topics, bounces from subject to subject. You're like, what are you saying? Not to mention his views on certain science things, but I'll put that aside. But it's strange the way he can be so different in discussing, in talking to the media. But the bottom line was this. He said, I feel like we have great pieces, but it's pretty glaring that we need one or two more pieces that will complement myself, KD, Kevin Durant, DJ means DeAndre Jordan, GT, which means Garrett Temple, Spence, which he means Spencer Dinwiddie, and Caris LeVert, and we'll see how that evolves. That was a surprising statement for a number of reasons. I mean, number one, that he's openly saying that his team's not good enough, which is true, probably, but it was interesting that he would say it that blatantly.
Well, it's true when they don't have Kevin Durant.
I mean, yeah, how true is it? We don't know how true that is.
I mean, there was a playoff team last year. They added two guys on max contracts and a guy who makes, you know, funny faces before tip-off.
Well, the part that I thought was most interesting and unfair about this was the two players he declined to mention.
Three starters.
The future of the team. Well, the two in particular that jumped out at me were Jared Allen, who is clearly the superior of the two big men on the Brooklyn Nets roster. And let's not confuse why DeAndre Jordan is there. He's a wonderful veteran to have in the locker room. Malika wrote a nice story about him the other day.
He wasn't a wonderful veteran to have in the Dallas locker room.
I know but he's been great. I know, Tim, he's been great with the Nets. I was there, and Malika's been there. And I know you have your issues with Jordan.
I think they were valid in Dallas.
Yeah, and I think they were valid in Dallas, but we're talking about the Nets now. And if you'd rather, every GM in the league, if you said to them, would you rather have Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan to build going forward, we all know what the answer would be. It's Jared Allen. He's a very talented young player. And then the other one was Joe Harris, who is one of the success stories of the Brooklyn Nets, of this great culture of, you know, sharing the ball and working. You know, when I did a story with Kenny Atkinson earlier in the year, he was talking about how these were his words. He said, Joe Harris sucked when we got him. And he's worked so hard to make himself a legitimate NBA, you know, really solid NBA rotation player. Now Joe Harris is up at the end of the year. So maybe, I don't know where Kyrie was going with that, but I thought, you know, I don't know if he thinks these things through or if it's stream of consciousness. I think it's stream of consciousness. And he would probably go back and say, oh, come on, I was just listing people, so I left a couple people off. I wasn't pointedly doing that.
I'm sure Jared Allen read that. I'm sure Joe Harris read that. I'm sure Torian Prince, who's a starter there, read
Prince
that.
Has been great for them.
I mean, if you're Harris and Allen, you're reading this going, dude, we were a playoff team without you. You're supposed to make us better. Like, what are you talking about on a night where you're minus 29 and nobody else on the team is worse than a minus 10? On a night when you're 6 of 21, like, what are you? And look, it ain't like Kyrie doesn't have a track record very recently, Jackie, you know this better than any of us, yes, of, you know, really lighting locker rooms on fire.
Yeah. It was bad timing, and I think poorly constructed. And just, you know, this is exactly what you worry about when you take on Kyrie, a wonderful talent who just, the stream of consciousness, Brian, you covered him. I've seen this before. I'm sure we'll see it again. It causes discord. It causes discord.
It was kind of Kyrie at his worst in that evening, because the way he played in that game was very similar to the things that drove his teammates crazy in Boston last year.
That's right.
And and this is the Kyrie experience. There are going to be other nights where Kyrie's brilliance, especially in late game situations, is going to carry you, and you're going to be thrilled he's on your team, and you're going to go into the post game locker room, they're expecting him to talk about how great of a performance it was, and he's going to give an answer that is going to make you scratch your head and wonder what the hell is going on. This is the Kyrie way, and this is what the Nets signed up for, and they signed up for it knowing that it comes along with what they hope is one of the greatest scorers in the history of the NBA and Kevin Durant, that they come together. And that's why they gave DeAndre Jordan a 4-year, $40 million contract, was because it was part of the package.
Look, this year you hope to make the playoffs, you want to be competitive, but this was about, obviously, next year when Kevin Durant comes back from his Achilles. So what are you talking about? You need another piece? Dude, you've got
one of the best scorers in NBA history who's joining this, you know, this team essentially next year. What, like, what are you talking about?
It's one of the things I think it's interesting that LeBron has been doing with the Lakers. LeBron made comments about so many times in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. LeBron had made comments about his coaches. He made comments about his roster makeup. He made comments, you know, about what he was surrounded with. It was all some passive-aggressive stuff. One of the things that I think late-career LeBron has learned is the value of showing support. And if you look at the LeBron over the last 9 months, the amount of support that he has showed the Lakers, especially in dark times, has been amazing. When the Magic Johnson stuff happened, I mean, LeBron was pissed off. He was furious that this partner that he thought he had in building this team, you know, dumps, you know, the team, doesn't even tell him. And then they go to hire a coach. He wants them to hire Tyronn Lue. They don't hire Tyronn Lue. And you know what? LeBron couldn't have been more supportive. He came to Frank Vogel's introductory press conference. All the coaches, he says, he's never done that. He showed support from day one in training camp. He showed support with the way the team was built. Rob Pelinka got an extension last week. LeBron's out there tweeting about it, showing support. LeBron's defending Rob Pelinka and the trade that he made for Anthony Davis. Like, this is Mr. Super Duper supportive LeBron, and I think it's one of the reasons why the Lakers were, I mean, the big reason was they traded for Anthony Davis, but they were able to get through those super duper choppy waters.
No, he's been a model teammate. That's what I would say about LeBron this year.
And I think Kyrie needs to move into that zone.
But they're two different personalities.
Oh boy!
So you know what though? LeBron has crushed guys' confidence in the past, though. LeBron is.
Oh, I know. I'm saying this is a difference.
So my point is, like, you can learn, you can evolve, and if Kyrie Irving wants to contend for championships again and not, you know, have kind of his legacy be a lot about him being a pain in the butt, he needs to learn and evolve.
But can I tell you the difference between these two superstars, if I may? Been around them both. Kyrie, and I'll say it again, is a stream of consciousness person. He thinks of these things, they're zooming around in his head, and they all come tumbling out. LeBron is very calculated in what he does and what he says. And that's been true from the very first day he came into the league. It's his greatest strength and at times his greatest weakness. So you can never ask Kyrie Irving to behave as LeBron James does because that's not how he operates. And it's too bad, because he could use a little restraint and he could use to be a little more calculating. And I agree with you, Brian. What LeBron has done this year, and you know, I was very critical of LeBron last year, and I frankly stand by that, because I think he quit on his team. You know, he showed disregard for his teammates, showing up to at the wine. I mean, we don't need to review all that. He didn't deserve any praise. I didn't vote him on my All NBA team, but you know, if you ask me right now, I would vote him as MVP of the league at this exact moment.
Well, I watched the video that when Kyrie made it, and he was. I don't think he was trying to make a statement, and I guess in some way, the fact that I want star players to be more transparent. I think criticizing that would be, a little bit counterproductive. I don't think he came to that and said, I'm going to make this glaring statement right now about what we need to do. I think he was, but nonetheless, I don't think it was helpful. And,
Of course not. Yeah.
So,
he's got to think more about the effect he has on his team. He still hasn't quite gotten that part figured out yet.
McMahon, you were at, in Houston last night, saw the Blazers in, Melo, return game.
I was in Memphis the night before. Neither one of them went real well for the Rockets.
Yeah. Ja Morant telling James Harden to learn who I am. He'll learn, though. James Harden doesn't get that aggressive defensively with anybody.
Yeah. And everybody knows who Ja Morant is by now, but neither here nor there.
Yeah. That I think I read about Russell Westbrook calling a, or not, he didn't call it, but he was very vocal in it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he was the most vocal in it, but it was a team-wide discussion. And look, I mean, D'Antoni, I thought, put it well. Their ship is getting rocked right now. And the problem is, and D'Antoni's bringing up, well, you know, you've got all these guys fighting injuries, blah, blah, blah. But when he said guys are more focused on the name on the back of the jersey than the front, well, you know what? This is part of the risk of having a team like the Rockets where you don't, you know, the front office does not really consider any sort of chemistry, okay? When you're shopping Clint Capella all summer long and ready to trade him, you know, I mean, hey, that's something that is always going to be in the back of his mind. When P.J. Tucker, you know, asked to discuss a contract extension and you blow him off, you know, that's probably always going to be.
But you give one to Eric Gordon.
Right, after telling P.J. how we don't do contract extensions, and you give one to Eric Gordon, who, by the way, you also shopped the whole time. You know, and you've got stuff like, you know, Daniel House threw a little fit on the bench recently when they were in Atlanta. You know, now he's coming off the. I mean, there's a lot of just weirdness going on with. Oh, and by the way, you've got a lame duck head coach who had his contract extension discussions publicly fizzle out in you know, spectacular fashion twice over the summer. I mean, there's a lot of potential for it's a wobbly boat. I'll put it like that. It's a wobbly boat in the first place. You know, pretty boat, got, you know, talent and all that, but I don't think it's that hard of a boat to rock.
So let me ask you though, you mentioned contract extensions, Clint Capella getting traded. None of those are Mike D'Antoni's account, right? What I like about D'Antoni is, you know, and you wrote it today, he started to try to put the proper spin on it and then just threw up his hands and said, look, no, nope, you know what?
Yeah, he just kind of laughed. He's like, I'm trying to put a good spin on this. I, you know, hey, we got to. And look, do all teams, and his point was all teams go through rocky times. Yeah, that is absolutely true. But man, like I said, it's just, there's nothing about the Rockets that seems really stable right now or long term.
I will say this, Tim, and I wondered this because we talked about them early on, and you know, they struggled early, as they always seem to do, and then they, you know, they started playing well, and we kept talking about how their defense was improving, and I think they're in the bottom third of points allowed. I think their defensive rating, they're, I think, also in the bottom third, around 18 or 19 in the league in terms of their defensive rating, and to me, that's the part that I would be worried about if I was Houston. If you're going to score that way, we know they're not going to, they're always going to be in the bottom of the league in assists because that's just how they play. But defensively, it seemed to me that they were rounding into form and now that's fallen off. Is there
any particular
reason why that is, Tim?
Well, I was going to say I would also be concerned about fatigue with your starters, especially James Harden and PJ Tucker. And I think those two things are directly related. I mean, you know, Harden, the workload that guy has obviously is arguably the heaviest in the league. And there's going to be times where he's going to rest on defense. And, you know, Ja Morant might take it personally, but that's just the way it is. And obviously that's been an issue. And then he's had two of his two lowest scoring games of the season over the last, I think, four games, you know, when they've lost three or four. So that's not a great sign. And then, you know, PJ Tucker, he's got the shoulder stinger where, you know, he hadn't missed a game in forever, but he missed, it was early in the one game they've won over the last four, and he missed the rest of that game. He's been questionable the last two. But, you know, PJ Tucker is, I mean, his workload defensively is almost as heavy as Harden's offensively, and they have just such little depth. And then, you know, D'Antoni obviously has a reputation for riding the starters and all that. But yeah, fatigue, effort, I think all these things are related.
Yeah, that's definitely a situation we're going to keep watching. I want to move on real quick. There was a trade in the NBA today. Jeff Teague basically got traded to the Hawks to be a to be Trae Young's backup to try to ease the trouble with Trae Young off the court. I don't really think there's much to talk about there. Minnesota took Allen Crabbe. It doesn't really do much for them other than open up a roster spot, and I think it's pretty clear Minnesota has got other things planned. We've talked on this podcast about options with Robert Covington. So I don't there's any, I want to talk about the hottest team in the league, but either of you guys have anything on that trade that makes you
I think you're right. The reason it was an interesting trade was, one, to get Trae Young some help, but if you're Minnesota, it tells you that something else is going to happen. Because, you know, Crabbe's an expiring contract. You create an extra space. Something's going
to
happen.
Well, and Gerson Rosas wants to put his fingerprints on that roster. You know, first year GM up there, obviously a team that had not had a whole lot of recent success over the last however many years. And so he needs to be able to put his own, stamp on that roster. And,
he didn't do much when he first came in. He pretty much left the core of the team alone. They're 15-25. Carl Anthony Towns has been out a month. I mean, all right. Well, I don't know if that happened. Let's wait and see what more comes down the list. Like I said, keep an eye on Covington. I think Covington, I mentioned Dallas. I think I mentioned, a Philly. They'd love to bring him home. He's an ideal player for them. I think it's a more complicated scenario, but possibly the Lakers. I know that they've been attached to D'Angelo Russell since the summer when they tried to sign him. I just don't see why unless they're trading him for Karl Towns, I don't see why they would make that move. And they're friends. They wouldn't trade Karl Towns for him. They would trade him to be with Karl Towns. The Warriors are not taking Andrew Wiggins. I don't see what the trade would be unless it's three teams, and then we could be here for hours coming up with nonsense. The Utah Jazz are the hottest team in the NBA. They've won 10 in a row. They are now tied for second in the Western Conference. Since they made that nice trade for Jordan Clarkson, he's playing 26 minutes a game, averaging 15 points off that bench, which was one of the more anemic benches in the league. He's lifted him up, and Mike Conley went out with a hamstring injury. They moved Donovan Mitchell to pure point guard. He's exploded and taken off. Joe Ingles, after a rough start, is playing better. McMahon, this team's in your realm. What have they been doing that has been working?
Yeah, and it's 15-16, so it's not like they just got going whenever they got Clarkson, but certainly they needed to upgrade their bench, and so that was a big move for them. I don't want to be dismissive here, but a big part of this is they're feasting on a soft stretch of schedule. They have one team during that 15-1 run. They've got one win over a team with a winning record. That's the Clippers. The only other team they played with a winning record was the Heat. It was a really good game down in Miami. Ended up being a 3-point loss, but other than that, they're beating up on bad teams. And obviously, if you're going to be a good team, if you're going to get home court advantage, you have to do that. But that's a big part of it. And then, look, because of the schedule situation, I want to note that, because I think it would be a ridiculous statement or implication to make that, hey, the Jazz are better off without Mike Conley. That's crazy. If the Jazz are going to be a legitimate threat in the West, they have to get Conley healthy, which is coming soon, and comfortable, which hasn't happened yet. And, get him to being the Mike Conley they thought they were getting when they gave up a lot to get him this summer from Memphis. Now, the question is, because as much as we're talking about Clarkson upgrading the bench, that starting five during this 10-game winning streak, every single starter has a plus-minus that is positive triple digits. I mean, they have been absolutely dominant. Who comes off the bench when Mike Conley returns? It's a nice problem to have, but that is a decision that Quinn Snyder is going to have to make.
What about Mike Conley?
Maybe Mike Conley. I was going to say I've been trying to watch them, Tim, because they're just playing so well. And, we were all lamenting Joe Ingles earlier in the year. Like, what's happened to this dude? And, you know, he's shooting almost 53% from the three-point line during this winning streak. And so I started looking up, well, how is the rest of the team, you know, doing? The team as a whole during this winning streak is shooting 40% from the three-point line. And that may be reflective, as you say, of the weak competition. But when you put up numbers like that, you should win. And I think I envisioned the Utah Jazz before the season started, this is more what I envisioned, right? A team that was going to be able to shoot threes and win.
Yeah,
this
they're
way.
The best three-point shooting team in the league, percentage-wise. And you mentioned Joe Ingles. He was coming off the bench. It didn't work. He really missed because he would start, you know, in recent years and then run the second unit. They'd pair him with Derek Favors in the substitution pattern. Joe Ingles has to have a really good screen roll man partner.
Right.
They have to have him with Rudy Gobert. He's absolutely thriving now that he's basically being paired with Gobert. So you can't bring him back off the bench. What they did in the one game that Conley played in the stretch before, you know, he aggravated that hamstring, he hadn't played again since. But what they did in that game was they brought Royce O'Neal off the bench. And O'Neal played well, and I forgot who they played, but they won, so on and so forth. The problem with that, and especially as you start thinking about the Jazz going to the playoffs, Royce O'Neal is their defensive stopper. Royce O'Neal is the guy who's going to guard LeBron James. He's going to guard Kawhi Leonard. You know, he's taking the toughest defensive assignment. And so that gets tough. And you mentioned, do you bring Mike Conley off the bench? Man, that's, you've already asked the guy to make such a huge adjustment. But man, I think that's probably the direction I'd go. And early on, he's going to be on a minutes restriction anyway. So maybe you can kind of, you know, mask it like that. And I'll say this, like Mike Conley is as unselfish a dude in the NBA as there is in the NBA. But that is a, you know, for a guy who's been a starter his whole career, is literally going to have his number in the Raptors at the franchise where he spent his whole career and then ask him to come off the bench. That is a pretty massive, I mean, I'm going to say sacrifice. You know, you might nitpick that word, but it really is.
Okay, but I'll play devil's advocate, though. He hasn't been able to stay healthy, and you always have sympathy for guys that have injuries. How many games has he played? 20, 22, something like that? So it may be that he just needs to understand where his team is. Yeah, so I think sometimes, you know, teams have to go on without you.
And Jackie, I think you've come up with the best solution. You've got me sold. You know, okay. you gotta sell Mike Conley. And again, it's a nice problem for Quinn Snyder to have.
Well, I haven't done my homework yet on the Western Conference reserves. Jackie wanted to do that today, but I just wasn't ready, quite frankly. Can Gobert get his much desired All-Star spot now that they're second in the West? The vote's coming up from the coaches soon.
If Gobert doesn't make it this year, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Crazy if he didn't make it.
I will tell you, Tim, as a preview for when we do it, I spent a lot of time on this, and he did make my team as a reserve for the Western Conference also.
Well, it helps him that Carl Towns
I was going to say, if anybody picks Towns ahead of Gobert when he's missed half the season, and he plays for a bad team.
Towns was having the best season of his career, but he has
Towns
been
was
out
unbelievable out of the gate. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's just advantage.
You got to play. You got to play the games. Got to play the games.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, could the Jazz get two? Donovan Mitchell, I think, is deserving as well.
He is, but I think I think a lot of voters will choose one or the other. And if that happens, you know how that goes. They always go for the score.
Well, and honestly, if that happens. Donovan has been publicly lobbying for Gobert, and I think Donovan is a good enough teammate and a savvy enough guy that he understands how important it is for Gobert. I think Donovan, as much as he'd love to be in an All-Star game, you know, he would rather see Gobert go if it's one or the other.
That's not how it works.
It's not how it works, man. Yep.
I understand.
Everyone else is going to
vote. I understand.
They're going to look at, since Donovan got moved to point guard, how Gray's been playing. He's averaging, 26, 25, something like that. And that's what people look at. And, I'll ask you point blank. Let me ask you point blank. Tim McMahon, right now. You're voting, and you have to choose either Gobert or Donovan Mitchell. One or the other. Never mind both. Who do you
I'm picking
choose?
Gobert. Gobert is clearly the Jazz's most valuable player.
Well, coming up in the next couple of weeks, they have two games with the Nuggets, Rockets, Mavericks. They are going to have some.
They got Mavs and Rockets coming next weekend, so I'll be there. Yeah, the soft stretch of schedule is coming to an end.
But still, 10 in a row, that's not easy in any league. All right, well, thank you very much for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Everybody have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.